Fishing like a local isn't just about catching fish. It's about connecting with the environment and the people who call it home. It's about hearing the stories and traditions that have been passed down for generations and sharing unforgettable moments with the people you meet along the way. Fishing like a local is having an experience that stays with you forever. And with Fishing Booker, you can experience it too, no matter where you are. Discover your next adventure on Fishing Booker.
This upcoming concert season will be all about the boots, and Tecovas is your stop for the best in Western style. Tecovas has seasonal and limited edition offerings this spring and summer, including men's and women's boots, apparel, hats, bags, and more. All Tecovas boots are made by hand in a time-honored tradition with timeless styles that are always on trend. And Tecovas has first wear comfort with little to no break-in period. It's hard to find this level of comfort paired with this level of style. Stop by your local Tecovas store, have a complimentary drink or two, that's WCB style, and shop new styles. The smell of fresh leather and friendly staff are at your service. Many stores even have leather custom branding to make your boots truly personalized, and with regular live music and events, there's no in-store experience like it. If you can't make it into a store, just visit tecovas.com, that's T-E-C-O-V-A-S.com. They offer free shipping on all boots, as well as free returns and exchanges, and ship right to your door. Go to tecovas.com and find your new favorite pair of boots today.
We're excited! Let's go, baby! Woo!
All right, guys, welcome back to the MVM show. I'm Titus, your host, and I'm here again with Mr. Jimmy Mueller, and we're excited to bring this to you guys. Sal told me to keep it rolling. Don't stop having him on as a quote-unquote co-host, so we're going to keep at it. And like a lot of you have said and I've said, it's just every time you're on, Jimmy, I learn something, and I know that the audience does. And so, man, when you have someone with a lot of experience like you do and travel a lot and invest your time into hunting and shooting like you do, it's I'm just going to take advantage of it every chance I can to get better myself. So before we get going, and I was kind of excited about this episode for you guys, I really, for the support that you guys give all the time, whether it's on the YouTube channel or whether it's on the actual Mid Valley Mercenaries YouTube channel or the podcast or whatever, all the support you guys give, I really enjoy and feel like I'm focusing on you guys and what you want when I do Q&As. So that's what we're going to do today. I really, like I was telling Jim before this, that we could probably do two or three of these to answer questions that are legitimate, good questions, even questions maybe I had or one or two myself. So if we only get through two or three or four of them through this 45 minute or so episode, don't worry, I haven't forgot about you. I'll get those questions asked, unless it's been something that's already been answered, which a lot of those were. If there's something you've asked in this, make sure you watch the whole episode and all the episodes, because a lot I know people have asked is things that have already been answered. So before we start, though, I just want to throw this out there. I got one of these from Mr. Jim. It's the 12 gauge, his own handmade choke tube removal.
Choke wrench.
That's a slick.
Thanks, man.
I mean, have you ever had a situation where this didn't get the choke out?
Yeah. Well, so if you,
I mean, if it's rusted,
yeah, if you have a choke tube that's literally like rusted in or swaged in or something, yeah, where you need like a serious wrench to like crack it loose with vice grips, that wrench is not going to work.
Yeah.
So I developed this wrench originally for sporting clays, right, to change chokes fast and easily and quickly. But it also works great for all chokes, you know, factory flush mount, other competitors' chokes on the market, my chokes. It works for everything. And the cool thing about it is I machined it. It's the only choke wrench that I know of, or at least speed wrench that I know of, that is fully corrosion proof. and fully made in the US. So the threaded shaft that's on there, I machine out a solid bar stock 304 stainless mil spec. It's not like a used bolt. It's machined out of solid bar stock. So it's totally rust proof in salt water. The red rubber that's on there, I actually had that custom made by Acme Rubber Company with my own Pantone color. The white knob on top is custom made by a company called Davies Molding. They custom molded that for me with a brass insert so it won't gall on the stainless. And also, so it is rust proof. And then the washers in it are all mil-spec 304 stainless. They will not rust. And if you notice on the base of the white knob, it's very big, where it will not crack where the insert is, with where a lot of other speed wrenches on the market, they crack and then they spin on the threaded insert. I've fixed that. Then the handle, I actually machine out a solid 70-75 T6 or T7 actually mil-spec plate. So then I anodize them, then I laser engrave them. So those choke wrenches are not only designed by me, but I literally machine everything on it.
That's awesome. No, yeah. It's slick, and I'll kind of show you guys a little bit close up what it looks like, because on YouTube, while he's talking, it won't show my camera. So just kind of let you guys look at that. You can pick them up on the website. And also, just to let everybody know, because I feel like this is part of the Q&A, is people have been asking, hey, when are you going to do a video? When are you going to do the pattern videos? When are you going to shoot at the decoys or on the water? And let's see this stuff put into action. I mean, I could pull hunt videos up from the main channel and show you, but we have the chokes. I'm working on videos. I already recorded some last week. Got the Invector DS choke, the decoy, and the UFO choke. Don't have it. We're waiting for it to come back in stock. Is the passing for my Browning A5. But we're going to work on these. So that's two videos alone right there. I already recorded one with Thomas's Ethos Cordoba 20 gauge. That'll be coming out soon. I'm trying to build an inventory of that. And also, some people were pretty excited to hear, is the 28 gauge. And I'm excited. The 28 gauge choke. Passing choke for my 28 gauge. So we're going to be patterning that soon too. And I'm really, really excited about this one just because this has a near and dear to my heart, Jamie, the gun anyway. So I'm like,
it's
really
a good one, man. You know, you're going to, when it comes to hunting season, you're probably going to want to get the decoy once we make more of them. Because the passing and UFO are nice and tight in that Benelli, but hey, tight is good, you know? The one thing I want to mention, seeing that you have one there for people to view, you notice that the shank below and above the thread are not Cerakoted. And I wanted to clarify that for people. So the reason that that's the only choke you've ever seen from Muller that's not Cerakoted all over is because that was Cerakoted and it was laser engraved on the body. And what had happened was the SBE3 28 gauges, the barrel tolerances where the choke goes has varied considerably from gun to gun. And I'm not going to get into why they vary that much because I don't want to throw anybody under the bus. But they do vary a lot in the SBE3 versus like the Super Sporting or the Cordoba or the Montefeltros or whatever. And so what happened was I have three barrels here. And when I made them, they all fit all three barrels I have beautifully. But then we started sending them out to customers and we started getting rejection rates saying that they wouldn't even go in some of the guns out there. And it turned out that it was like 95% SBE3s. I found out why. So then what I did was I had all these chokes that I had just made, spent tremendous amounts of time making. So what I did was I brought them to my centerless grinder and I ground those diameters down a few thousandths so they would fit the SBE3s also.
Oh, wow.
So now the reason that they're silver like that without Cerakote is because I OD ground them, but now they fit everything. So we only have passing and a few UFO left. The decoys sold out. But when we make the next batch, obviously I'll be taking those sizes into consideration. So the new ones or the future ones will be Cerakoted.
Okay, and to put you kind of on the spot, hopefully I didn't do something wrong here when I said this, but someone was asking about the chokes, and I said, for as far as I know, most of those stocks or chokes will be in stock come before duck season, or give or take, probably.
They better be.
Okay, well, there you go, guys. You heard it. That's what the boss says. They better be. So whatever you were told otherwise, they better be, I guess. So.
Yeah. So, I mean, here it is. I mean, basically, listen, our sales are going through the roof, partially thanks to you, and a lot of other reasons, right? Mm-hmm. Word of mouth. People are experiencing the benefits of Muller chokes. Mm-hmm. They're realizing that they actually do what I say. It's not a marketing gimmick. It's not marketing hype. It's not myth, right? So people are excited because their hit to miss ratio is going up, cripple ratio is going down, no limits on ammo. I mean, all these cool things are happening, right? So sales are going up. And what happened was I ended up going on back order on some of the top sellers because my projections weren't big enough, right?
Right.
By forecasting. So we bought another machine. We've doubled our capacity. We've hired more machinists. So everything's looking great for next season. And what I want people to know is we're really working hard on creating faster and bigger inventory on the top sellers. So this doesn't happen anymore.
Yep.
You know?
Yep.
So I'm going to focus less on the soft sellers or the slow sellers. I'm going to really focus on the top sellers so that people will get what they want when they need it. And I'm really doing everything I can to have everything ready for next duck season, meaning, you know, September 1st.
Right. Perfect. So. Perfect. And that still gives time. That still gives plenty of time for people to pattern and get everything dialed in that they want to.
Absolutely.
So, anyways, yep. Okay. Well, good. Sounds good. Let's get into the Q&A, and I'll do my best if your guys' names are part of this or if it was an email or a message on Instagram, I will mention your name, who asked it. And let's go ahead and get started. So first question, let me say this first. And the reason I was showing these chokes too is not only to let you guys know that the videos are coming out, we're working on them, we're already recording, but also to let you know in there. And with this, we basically have a partnership, friendship, and he was so graciously kind to offer to you guys, our listeners and viewers of the videos, a discounted code. It is MVM2024, do all caps on the alphabet, MVM2024, all one word at checkout, and you'll get a 10% discount in it, and it's good for us too. Supports the podcast, supports the channel, stuff like that. So we appreciate that. If you're interested in buying one, I highly suggest doing that, and a lot of you have. So let's get started. All right, so from, and this is what it says in his email, Dr. Kyle Wallner, ask a super simple question, but I know this could get extensive, but we'll just try to, if there's a good breaking point, Jim, wherever you feel like you can cut it off, and we'll go to the next one, but that's up to you. I want to definitely get this information and answer Mr. Wallner. He asks this question, is porting a shotgun barrel effective?
So porting a shotgun barrel is not as effective as it would be on a high-pressure, high-powered rifle. Shotguns, unless you're shooting a really heavy load, meaning, you know, like let's say slugs or 3-inch buckshot where you have a huge amount of back pressure. Porting does not help tremendously to the point where it's almost insignificant. Now, furthermore, if porting is done correctly, so if you're doing something like Magna porting or Pro porting, where the porting is done right next to the rib, almost facing directly upward, you know, you can't face it perfectly upward because the rib is in the way, but they face them pretty good toward the sky. And what that will do is what porting's supposed to do. It forces the gases upward, which in turn forces the muzzle down. Okay, that's why we poured barrels. Now, the problem is most shotgun barrels out there, like if you look at a Browning, for example, the porting is on the sides of the barrel. All that does is muzzle blast your buddies in the blind and your dog. It does literally nothing in regards to forcing the muzzle downward, which is why we do it. It's a fishing lure effect. The Belgian Browning people call the shots on how the guns are made. You'll never see a Belgian Browning ported, only American Brownings. And the reason that American Browning's reported is because the Belgian Browning people say that American people like the way it looks, so they buy the guns. So 100% proof that it's fishing lure effect. Wow. It looks cool, so you buy it. Sort of like ported chokes, right?
Wow.
So porting can be helpful if it's done right, like I just spoke about. It has to be facing upward. It has to be done in the right area of the barrel. It has to be the right size, the right everything. Now, if you do the right porting and you're shooting heavier hunting loads, yes, it can be a little helpful for a follow-up shot. But to be honest with you, I've had them, and I've had them on multiple guns. I've had them on multiple gauges, multiple barrel lengths. I've shot all different loads. And to be honest with you, the only time I felt the difference significant enough to actually invest my money in having it done was when I was shooting slugs. Hmm. Other than that, when I was shooting target loads, sporting clays or trap shooting, or when I was even shooting, you know, 3-inch duck loads, it was not significant enough for me to spend my hard earned money on getting it done. So wow. That's the answer to that.
Well, okay. Yeah. Because, and this is not to pick out any brand, but like my Ethos Cordova, that's Benelli, right?
Yeah.
Like you said, that it's even, I feel I could be wrong because I've shot 20 gauge before that had no porting. And I was like, man, this thing, it sounds like a 22, which mind you, that was with 2 3/4 shot. I'm shooting it with 3-inch. So I know that's going to obviously make a difference, but I would think right on loudness of the gun. But man, when I shoot my 28 gauge, I'm not going to lie. I've said this before. It's pretty loud. Like,
yeah,
I feel like, and it has to be from that porting, right?
Sure it is.
Yeah. And there's, you don't, and so basically what you're saying and the way that they're porting is it's pretty much none effect almost in a way. I mean, I hate to put you on the.
Correct. It's not. So let's think of it.
Because I didn't buy it for looks. Right? I'll tell you that right now. I did not.
Yeah,
in fact,
cool.
I didn't want porting, but I wanted that gun. And then I realized, then that like 2 months later, they came out with the SB3 20. And I was like, are you kidding me? I could have waited 3 more months. So.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th, hosted by Kevin Hart. The 7-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
With threats to our nation waiting around every corner, adaptability is more important than ever. When conditions change without notice, quick strategic thinking is crucial, and with obstacles consistently impending, determination is essential in overcoming them. It's this willingness, decisiveness, and resilience that sets Marines apart. With our fighting spirit, we don't just fight battles, we win them. Marines are the constant our nation counts on to fight the unknown, and through adaptable problem solving, we do just that. Learn more at Marines.com.
Yep. So let's think about it in a common sense manner, right? Why do we think that we would even need porting on a 410 or 28? I mean, come on, man, we don't. And the only reason they do it is fishing lure effect. They think it looks cool. And you know what? It looks cool until you shoot a few hundred rounds through and there's plastic hanging off it. There's carbon all over your freaking barrel. There's carbon all over my shot cam lens. I mean, it's just freaking disgusting. I'm sorry.
No, I agree with you. I 100%. Yeah. And that's why it breaks my heart, because I love that gun and I love shooting it. But like you said, you really got to be careful with your buddies in the blind. And even myself shooting it, I'm like, my goodness, my ears, you know, that it should not be this loud for this small of a gauge, right? No. But
and you know, it also opens up the possibility of debris coming out and hitting people.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I'm not making a claim that it does that, but I assure you, I've had blowback where I got stuff in my eyes. It was not from the action. It was from the porting when the wind was blown. Mm-hmm. You know, so I'm not interested in porting. Unfortunately, some guns come that way just because they do, and you have no choice. The only choice you have is to buy a different gun.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, it is what it is.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Let's go to the next question. This one is from the YouTube MVM show channel. Question by, let me see here, Nick. Well, at least that's what your name tag is on here. But Nick Walston asked a good question. And I know it's been answered on here, but I thought it was fair to bring it up again to answer his specifically. He said, why do you like number six shot when it comes to steel shells? He said, new to duck hunting, and these episodes with Jim are awesome. So thanks for asking that question. Question, Nick.
Yeah, great like question.
To revisit that again.
Yep. So basically, I'm a big component. Well, it's just physics, right? Ballistics. Mm-hmm. So the more pellets you have, the less space you have between the pellets, which means you have a higher margin of error in your pattern because it's going to be a bigger usable pattern. And also you're going to have a higher percentage of kill rate because there's so little space between each pellet. Chances are you're going to put pellets into the vitals, meaning the head, the neck, the heart, the lungs of a duck or a bird, right? Or if you're shooting clay targets, same scenario. If you have an on edge target, you're going to have more of a chance of hitting it if you have more pellets, right? So number six shot steel is incredible. It's like throwing a blanket on a bird. Now, the only downside is a number six steel pellet does not retain a lot of foot pounds of energy at distance because steel is light, right? So you have to really understand what your limitations are. And one thing that I always try to teach people that is a myth and a lot of hype and a lot of false claims is that, or false teachings, let's say, by mentors, coaches, ballistics experts, right? Steel shot retains more penetration energy than people have let us think or taught us, okay? And what I mean by that is I want you to sort of learn by yourself. I want you to go out and test it. And until you do it and see it yourself and experience it yourself, all you have is to go by what people spew.
Mm-hmm.
And most of what people have spewed forward is false. Okay. So if you go out and you shoot steel sixes, hopefully not at hyper velocity, and hopefully keep the pattern together. If you go out and you shoot a nice load of steel sixes, like an ounce and a quarter, which is a tremendous amount of pellets, and you shoot at a mallard sized duck, or a wood duck, or a widgeon, or a gadwall, never mind a teal, mm-hmm. right?
Mm-hmm.
If you were to shoot at a mallard-sized duck with a good steel six load using like my decoy choke, you would paper bag a mallard at 40 yards like you shot them with anything.
Mm.
I mean, because you're just covering them with pellets, right?
Mm-hmm.
The reason that a lot of people don't kill ducks with steel, or they don't kill ducks well with bismuth at extended yardage, is because they either, number one, they didn't hit them with enough pellets, or number two, they didn't hit them in the front where the vitals are. They shot them in the butt. And like I've said before, if you shoot a duck in the butt with a high-powered rifle, he's not going to die right away. Never mind, you know, BBs in a shot shell. So we need to put the pattern on the front of the bird, and we need to put enough pellets on the vitals to be able to get an ethical, consistent kill.
Mm-hmm.
And number six steel shot will help you do that within reasonable distances. And what I would say within reasonable distances, even though I just said out to 40, for most people, I would say a steel six is good out to 35 yards. And when I say 35 yards, I mean with a rangefinder, not a guess,
right.
Not an estimation.
Right.
35 yards is really good with steel sixes.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, that I like to hear that again. I know we've talked about that maybe a couple times on our show, yeah. But you never know when people hear. And then just to bring it back out again, I think was good.
It gets back to the same thing we talked about, Titus. Like a 1 ounce load is 1 ounce, right?
Mm.
But pellet count is king. And we talked about that in our other podcast.
Mm-hmm.
So if you have a 1 ounce slug, it's one projectile, even though it's 1 ounce. Chances are you're not going to hit anything flying. But if you got 1 ounce of steel number six, that's a lot of pellets, right? So you've got a big margin of error, a big pattern, effective pattern, because you're going to hit the bird with a lot of pellets. Mm-hmm. So that's why number six, regardless of material, a number six is really good. Mm. When you get into TSS, a number six, you don't have many pellets. You've got to go really big with a payload,
yep,
like ounce and 5/8 or even heavier. But that's for another discussion.
Yeah. And I think a lot of that we talked about a lot about too on the last episode we recorded. I believe that one's already out as well. But
yep,
we'll go ahead and go on to another question. It looks like from Jeffrey Barner. And I think we talked about practicing stuff on the last couple ones too. But so I'm just, again, trying to ask what you guys are asking specifically. Says, he said, so if you're practicing with similar loads, let me say this. Just so you guys know, I did not pre-send him these questions. He's answering these questions completely in the blind, and he knows this information. So his response, as quick as it is, just so you know, he is not.
I was just pulling up my chart about the 1-inch sixes.
Yeah, yeah.
So
go ahead. That's a good one.
Steel sixes.
Listen to this, guys. This is focusing on this point right here, because he brought this up last time. And I must have looked at, I wrote that down as you were saying that, Jimmy. And I kept looking at that. And someone asked me, a friend of mine locally, didn't even listen to the podcast, was asking me something. And boom, I sent him those numbers. They're like, holy cow.
Yeah.
That's crazy.
Yeah, man. I mean, there it is, man.
Look at that. Yeah. One ounce load. Okay, wait. So was that steel? What was the steel?
One ounce steel six is 315 pellets. You know?
Okay, can you read that whole list so people can see the difference because of the weight?
Yep. So 1 ounce load, 1 ounce load of steel sixes is 315 pellets. 1 ounce load of bismuth number six is 254. 1 ounce lead is 225. And 1 ounce TSS is 138. So tremendous amounts of difference based on pellet material, based on weight and volume. Mm-hmm. So that's what I always tell people. Don't be blinded by payload, right?
Mm-hmm.
Be focused on pellet count, because pellets are what kill birds and break targets, not payload.
Yep.
And certainly not velocity. So you have to pay attention to what your pellet count is, regardless of shot material, regardless of size of pellet, regardless of the length of your shell. None of it means anything. What matters is how many pellets are in that shell that you're sending down range based on what you're using it for.
Mm.
Pellet count is king. That's all that matters.
Okay.
And keep your velocity below 1350 feet per second always.
Okay.
Regardless of pellet material.
Okay. All right, so back to Jeffrey Barner's question.
Yep. All right, Jeff.
He said, so if you're practicing with similar loads as far as hunting, right? Because we had talked about this. Do you leave the choke you shoot waterfowl with in when you go to the sporting clay range? Is it important that you shoot the same gun? He said he shoots an over and under at the range, but then Benelli for hunting. So, I mean, that's kind of a really broad open question. But maybe if you could just answer the first part. You talked about this, about shooting the similar ammo and same gun when you're getting ready for hunting.
So this is a really great question, Jeffrey, because so many people are misled by this, or they don't think about it, and it's really detrimental. So number one, let's talk about your gun, right? Remember the old saying, beware of the man with one gun. He probably knows how to use it well. That's true. So I know so many people, it's laughable, because I've done it. We've probably all done it. But then as we do it more, we realize how foolish it is. And it makes sense when you even think about it. So I have so many people that they shoot skeet, trap, sporting clays, and they hunt, right? Mm-hmm. Four disciplines. They use four different guns. For skeet, they use a 26-inch over and under, 26-inch barrel over and under. Then for trap, they shoot a 28 or a 30-inch single barrel, like a BT-99, mm-hmm, right? With point of impact set at like 80-20 or even 100-0, right? Because, you know, a trap target's going up. So you've got to, You know, you've got to be able to have the target above the barrel, which means you've got to have a higher point of impact. Mm-hmm. That's the trap mentality. Then they have a sporting clay gun, which may be a 32 or a 34 inch barrel over and under, or it may be a 28 inch or 30 inch barrel semi-auto, right? Mm-hmm. Then they go into duck hunting and they take out their Benelli inertia driven 28 inch barrel or their pump gun or their whatever, right? All of these guns have different feel. They all move different. They all have different trigger pull poundage. They all have different sight planes. They all have different point of impacts. They all pattern different and they all respond differently. Mm-hmm. Meaning when you're moving it to the target, how it responds when you're moving it and when you're leading the target and the trigger pull and how it affects everything. All this is critical on your wing shooting ability. So that's just the gun. Now you take that factor and now you factor in different ammo, different velocities, different chokes, different patterns, different distances. This is all critical when it comes to good wing shooting. You know, so many years people have told me, oh, you make it harder than it is. Shotgunning is easy. No, it's not. You know, is it easy to pick up a rifle and shoot a deer at 50 yards versus 600?
No.
It's two different worlds.
Totally. Man.
And shotgunning is the same way. You're either going to be able to point and shoot something at 20 yards in the bush, or you're going to be able to shoot a long crossing target at 60 yards. That's two totally different skill sets and experience and capability, right? Mm-hmm. So when it comes to guns, try to use one gun for everything. And I know you trap shooters right now are freaking out because, you know, oh my God, I can't use the same gun hunting ducks as I shoot for trap. Well, yes, you can. Of course you can. And why? Because your brain up here, your computer, the 6-inch computer between your ears that does everything, knows exactly what your gun is doing at all times. So if you're shooting trap, skeet, sporting clays, ducks, pheasant, purdees, quail, doves, pigeons, rail, marsh hens, it doesn't matter. Take a gun that you love, that fits you well, that you're comfortable with, that you're confident with, because confidence is key, right? Because our perception is our reality. So get a gun that's reliable, that you love, okay? Doesn't matter how much it costs, what it looks like, I don't care, right? Set it up at 50-50 point of impact, meaning it shoots right where you aim or right where you look or right where you point, whatever you want to call it with a shotgun, right? And practice. And the reason I say that is because if you have a gun that's set up with point of impact 50-50, that means the center of the pattern is exactly where you aim or point the gun or where you look, right? The reason this is so critical is because the 6 inches between your ears is way better than you can ever be.
Yeah.
Right. So when you're shooting trap, or when you're shooting skeet, or when you're shooting five stand or feet task, or you go out and you shoot a duck coming over you, going over the top of your head from behind, crossing, coming down to the decoys, falling out of the sky to the decoys, going straight up like a teal after you fire a shot. All these things, your brain knows where to put the muzzle if it knows where the gun shoots. But now let's say you take and you go shoot 1,000 rounds in trap with a gun that's set at 80-20, and you have to float the target by this much to hit it. Then you go take your Benelli or your Beretta or your Browning or your Remington 870 that shoots 50-50, and you go out to the duck blind, and you have a duck that's going up slightly like a trap target. What do you think you're going to do? You're going to float it like this because you're so used to your trap gun and you're going to shoot below it. Right.
Yep.
So this is why it's so critically important to shoot one gun the most you can at everything. Know it, get used to it, have it become a part of you, like it's an extension of your body, and go shoot everything with it. Because I can assure you, after many years of me shooting many targets and many birds, I've come to realize that the worst thing I can do is shoot different guns.
Yeah. Yeah. That's if that don't answer it, I don't know what will. Yeah. I got some really good ones here. Some of these are a little bit of a challenge question, meaning they're challenging what some of the stuff you're saying. Not this one right now, but the next one's going to be, just so you know. But this is from, this is kind of a 2-3 part. So if we can just kind of get each one. Jim Dressel on the YouTube MVM show podcast channel, he said, I missed it somehow. What's his go-to steel load? And it's a 2-part question. Is there no combination using steel shot that can kill after 35 yards with a decent pattern?
So number one, I'll mention brands because people are at, you know, he's asking mm-hmm. me specifically. So in a 20 gauge steel load, the best one in the market right now that I'm aware of is Apex, because they load it heavy and it's at 1250 feet per second. Mm. Ballistically, it's superior to any other 20 gauge steel load on the market. Okay. Unless there's a new one that came out that I'm not aware of yet, right now, Apex 20 gauge steel load is the best on the market ballistically, because it's heavy, because it's slow. Okay. Move up to 12 gauge steel loads. I like any 3-inch load. If I'm shooting extended distance or I'm shooting divers, sea ducks, geese, I like 3-inch. I like 1 ounce and 3/8 because that's the most pellets you could fit into a 3-inch hull. And I like it to be 1300 feet per second, only because they don't make it slower. If they made it 1200 or 1250, that's what I would shoot. And that's what I would recommend. That's what I hand load for myself. 1200 to 1250, regardless of pellet material or pellet size or length of hull. Okay. Cause that's sort of a sweet spot. All right. So basically steel shot, 12 gauge, 2 3/4 inch, 1 1/4, 1275, 1300, 3-inch, 1 3/8 at 1300, because they don't make it slower. The moment you go over 1300 feet per second, even at 1300 feet per second, the pattern is slowing down quicker due to Newton's third law of physics. And it's also spreading out prematurely, meaning, I don't know, if I had to put a number on it, I'd say at about 25 yards, it really starts to open up regardless of choke. It's physics, right? So basically keep it slow, keep it heavy. And that's what I say about steel shot loads. In regards to 35 yard limit, that's absolutely bogus. I've got, if you take a good 3-inch steel load with 1 3/8 of payload with the right shot size for the game you're pursuing, with one of my chokes like a decoy or passing, I can paper bag a mallard every shot, every day at 45 yards with a range finder, stone dead like you shot him with lead. Hmm. Wow. I've got tons of shot cam videos to prove it, and I've been doing it for years.
Yeah. And I know you can after hearing everything we've talked about for so many times, but several hours now.
Yeah.
But that was a great question and a great response. I appreciate that. He had one more question on there at the back end that's totally different that I did want to ask you, because I actually almost forgot about it, that you had talked about it. And I think it was episode 276. Let me see here. Just so people can go back and listen if they want. Listen to 276. He was on as a guest. That was a part 4 of the series there we did. But he asked, when is your book coming out?
That's awesome, man. So my book should have came out several years ago, right? It was done. I had somebody edit it for me. The person that edited it for me was wonderful. They did such a great job. They tried so hard. They added a lot of material by asking a lot of AA and masterclass sporting clay shooters questions of what they would like to see in my book. And then after all of that editing went in and all those questions got put in and answered, my book became 3 books. And then what happened was it didn't flow right like it originally did when I wrote it. So then that set me back like a couple years trying to organize it so it flowed right. Now that my one book went to like 3 books in one, then it got very overwhelming for me, and I just couldn't make it flow the way I wanted any longer, because now the book that I created became more than what I created. And I just sort of put it on the back burner. So, you know, I had a lot of things going on in my life. So basically it got pushed back. And then when I revisited it, I realized, hey, this one book cannot be three books in one. It has to be multiple books. So then I went back to my original plan with my original writings and made it again into one book. I designed an amazing cover. My wife helped me with that. I'm very happy with the cover. It's beautiful. Now it's all ready to be printed. The problem is I need to find somebody to be able to type it in the proper format so it can go to print. So the reason that it's not out yet is because of that. So when will it be out? I don't know.
Okay. Well, we're looking forward to that. And I would say this is definitely going to be one of the first places you'll hear about it for sure. Cause I'll be putting it out there, and I cannot wait to get that. That's one of those books I feel like is going to be, I'm going to have a yellow and an orange and a blue highlighter going through that, making notes. So how many pages do you think that's going to be?
The first book is going to be probably around 200.
Okay.
And then there's going to be books after that that go into other things.
Okay, cool. Awesome. Yeah. I'm excited about that. Okay. So here's the one question. And I forgot to get this clear before we're live recording, but you had an appointment, at 1:30, correct? Your time?
I'm okay. I just need to end at about 1:30, 1:45.
Okay, perfect. We'll do that then.
Not anything rushed. It's not a written in stone appointment. I just need to be somewhere.
Yeah. I do too, technically. So.
Yep.
All right. Thank you. Okay. Here we go. Well, I had it here pulled up. Let's see here. Okay. Here we go. This is from Connor on, again, the YouTube channel. And I'm not sure, he doesn't have a last name, and I'm not sure, I haven't recognized this name before, but I'm sure they've commented before. But anyways, this is what they say. So it's a long one, Jimmy, just so you know. Absolutely love this series. I have learned so much, and it is hard to dismiss what the industry and other hunters have been saying for years. It would be nice to have links attached to the video that show the test results that Mr. Mueller states. But this is where he starts going. He says, one thing that immediately was brought to my attention was how he tailor fits each choke for each shotgun model on the market. I find this to be a little bit of a stretch. And this is not the first time a couple people have said this. And I know you already have an answer for this because we've talked about this before, but just putting listeners' thoughts in here, okay?
That's good.
This is especially evident when looking at Mr. Mueller's website. For context, I shoot an original Benelli SBE that has a mobile choke. When going onto his website, I see that he has these available. What is puzzling is that there isn't a section where you can get a mobile choke and then select what firearm you want to have tailored for it. That this part seems a little far-fetched, but everything else is on par. So how would you respond to that?
So I think what he's asking is, so I have the mobile choke system, right? Mm-hmm. Many guns take the Beretta mobile choke system, including his original Benelli SBE1, right? So I think what he's asking is, if I tailor made these chokes specifically with gun specific patterning geometry for each gun individually, why don't I list like different mobile chokes based on the gun that mobile choke is going into? Mm-hmm. I'm assuming that's what he's asking.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
So let me clarify this. So basically, when I went and tested all the different guns, and I took the chokes out of all these guns and I shot them on paper, on mud, on water, on live birds, on clay targets with no choke and then with choke. And then I found that they all shoot differently with no choke at all. And they all like different geometry inside the choke for that particular gun. What I also learned was that all of the guns that take a specific choke system, if the bore diameter is the same within reason, meaning this. So if you take a Benelli SBE1, a Beretta 303, Beretta 390, Beretta 391 Eureka, SBE, well, the SBE1, an M4, I think it is, or an M2. I mean, whatever it takes, the Benelli standard choke or the Benelli or the Beretta mobile choke. If you take the chokes out of all of those 719 to 722 bore guns, they all pattern so close to each other and so similar, you nor anybody else will ever see a difference or experience a difference. So when I took that choke system and I created my GSPG, which is my gun specific patterning geometry for all these different guns, all the different guns that take that choke system that have that bore diameter pattern very consistent to each other. Mm-hmm. So there's no need to make micromanaging on the geometries or the constrictions for those different guns that take that same choke system. Mm-hmm. Now, where it can be different is where circumstances come into play where you should not be using that choke in the gun. And what I mean by that is there's some off-brand guns that take, let's say they cross-reference with a Beretta mobile choke, like maybe some Turkish Huglu guns or some Maverick guns or some, I think it's called an Impala gun, or some of these other off-brand guns that are inexpensive that they made in the factory, maybe in Turkey or some other country, that the mobile choke screws into it. The problem is the barrel bore diameter may be 730 or 735 or 740. Mm-hmm. That Beretta mobile choke system should never be put into that gun, regardless of what the manufacturer tells you or regardless of what other choke companies will tell you, just so they could sell you a choke. Because what happens is if you take a Beretta mobile choke that was machined to go into a 720, 724 bore barrel, and you put into a 735 barrel or a 740 barrel, the back of that choke tube could actually obstruct the barrel bore diameter. You could shoot the back of the choke, peel a choke, and bulge the barrel. Mm. Okay.
Okay.
Let's say that doesn't happen. Let's say that the opening of the choke is big enough to allow the shot to go into it safely. The problem is the geometry inside the choke tube and the exit diameter of that choke tube and all the geometries that are put into the choke tube to give it that gun specific pattern geometry for the best patterns possible out of that gun just went out the window because it's all no good.
Gotcha. Okay.
So that's why it's important to understand what gun you're buying, what barrel bore diameter it is. It's important for you to know as the gun owner, has that barrel been backboard or overboard aftermarket by a company that does barrel work, especially if you've bought the gun used? These are all really critical things that you as the gun owner need to be responsible because it's a firearm to understand that firearm inside and out. It's not my job to do that for you. And it's your job to be safe with a firearm and learn that about it.
Right, right. Okay, these are going to be a couple compliments, basically. I could read them for days, but I won't. I'll just throw a couple in there. This compliment might even make you want to respond to it in a way like to add something to it, and you'll see once I read it, okay? So this is from Robert Mullally, I believe. It says, videos like this are great. Again, this is the podcast video episode, I think maybe part six. It says, here is someone who has done tens of years of testing is willing to share everything he's learned. Never take information or knowledge personal. Use it. Learn from it. It's like this in the bow hunting world too, heavy versus light arrows. Just be grateful that someone is willing to help you be a better shooter, archer, or hunter. I just want to thank people like Jim Mueller who make our sport lifestyle always striving to be better than yesterday. Okay. Another one says, this is the one you might want to respond to maybe. This is from Baja Homer One, which is just a tag for YouTube name. Doubt it's his real name, but it says, these podcasts have disrupted my day-to-day life. And I'm sure there's many people around me that are tired of hearing me explain to them about it. Laugh out loud. I really enjoy your podcast and just recently got home from a trip to North Dakota where I was doubling up on specs out to 40 yards with a molar decoy choke and a 20-gauge Benelli using Boss number 5s. Please keep bringing out the info and hopefully start getting specific with different shot. I recently started loading my own shells and hope to hear some good info to steer me in the right direction.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
A life that has the stories to back it. A life to be proud of. It's a Winchester life.
Yeah, baby. 6'8 Western. Oh, mule deer, baby, right there.
Tune in every Tuesday at 7 p.m. Eastern on Waypoint TV.
Brave anglers search for the one they call king, but who will take his throne?
Tune in to Waypoint TV's Battle for Silver, Saturday, May 18th from 12 to 6 p.m. Eastern. Presented by Abyss Battery. Waypoint TV.
Yeah, that's awesome, man. Thank you for all that. So, you know, one thing that we really need to pay attention to that you've been learning on these that I've been trying to teach is, you know, you can get away with, especially with Muller chokes, you can get away with opening up. So like my decoy choke, I've got to be honest, I feel personally, like my decoy choke is the most beneficial choke I have ever developed. It's certainly one of the most, if not the most beneficial choke in the entire industry. And I could say the same thing about my U1 and U2 and my Featherlight Clay Target series, mm-hmm. right? My following in that is like, you know, everybody says across the country and all over the globe, oh, put a Muller U2 in and just shoot everything. Don't ever take it out. Mm-hmm. And you know, that's true to a point, but the problem is you're still going to be handicapping yourself on targets that are inside 30 yards mm-hmm. or inside 25, let's say. Well, with the decoy choke, my decoy choke is comparable to what would be my U1.5 or my U1.5. So my decoy choke, I created that for hunting loads specifically, meaning steel, then for bismuth, then for TSS, and then before that, heavy shot, Spheros 15, heavy 13. I mean, all these different things, right? That came out, tungsten iron, tungsten matrix, tungsten polymer, right? Mm-hmm. So originally I developed it for steel shot and then bismuth and of course lead, right? So when I started really testing my decoy choke, I started testing it on clay targets using lead target loads, because that's a really good staple and standard to go by, right? Mm-hmm. It's a small pellet. Yes, it's lead, but it's a very small pellet, meaning 9s, 8.5s, 8s, 7.5 at the largest. Normally, when we're hunting ducks, if we're using steel or bismuth, we're using something much, well, not much bigger, but bigger than a 7.5 mm-hmm. lead, right? So even though the weight of lead is heavier than bismuth or steel, it's a much smaller pellet, meaning the downrange energy is not going to be, it's going to be somewhat equivalent to a larger steel pellet or a larger bismuth pellet, right? Mm-hmm. Within reason. And obviously we could talk about that for days, micromanage certain distances and grams per cubic centimeter and where velocity and foot pounds of energy drops off. I mean, without getting into all that technical stuff, which is way beyond what anybody wants to deal with anyway. If you use my decoy choke, I have created it to be extremely beneficial at normal shooting distances. And what I call normal shooting distances is literally out to 35, 40 yards. Mm-hmm. Okay. Now, obviously, you have to take in pellet size and pellet material and pellet count and velocity into all of that.
Yeah.
But what I mean, if you take my decoy choke and you put it into your target gun and you go shoot clays with it, with a 7.5 or even an 8 lead target load, it will crush consistently targets out to 40 yards mm-hmm. all day long, 50 even. right? Consistently, it'll break them. Now, if you put that choke into your hunting gun, it's going to give you the most beneficial, largest margin of error pattern you've ever had in your gun in your entire life, and probably the best one you'll ever have. And I'm not saying that because I developed it. I'm saying it because I created it that way. So if you're shooting puddle ducks, or if you're shooting divers, or if you're shooting geese, and most of your shots are honestly inside 35 yards, the decoy choke is the only thing you should put in your gun, regardless of whether you're shooting lead, steel, bismuth, TSS, heavy shot, heavy metal, tungsten polymer, tungsten iron, tungsten anything. The decoy choke is what you should be shooting. If you want a big margin of error, you want good killing capability, you want to be able to knock cripples down if they are crippled, the decoy choke is going to do that for you. It's incredibly universal and it's incredibly beneficial.
Yeah. Thank you, Jim.
You're welcome.
Okay. We're getting close to that mark. I think we can do another one for sure. Is that okay with you?
Absolutely.
Okay. Jack Sims 8671 says, another eye-opening podcast. Thanks. Please ask him his opinion about high speed of shot, 1,500 plus feet per second, effects on the actual gun's wear and tear. I have been told by my local gunsmith that the high speed wears down springs much faster, resulting in a gun not cycling. I'm convinced on patterns at 1,300 feet per second. Wondering if it causes less wear and tear. That's another good reason to shoot the slower shot speed. So it's kind of two part, but your one answer could answer both.
Yeah. So I'll give you an example. So when Remington came out with their, a hypersonic 1,700 feet per second steel loads, Remington designed it. They came out with it and people were splitting receivers in steel receivered Wingmaster 870s and 1100s. So there's your answer as far as wear and tear. Mm-hmm. You've got a load that was developed by a company that made the best pump shotgun of all time, one of the strongest guns of all time, aside of the Winchester Model 12 Super Speed Super X Model 12 3-inch heavy duck gun. Mm-hmm. Okay. The next strongest gun that was ever created on the planet was an 870 Wingmaster by Remington. Their load at 1,700 feet per second was splitting receivers. Mm. Steel receivers, not aluminum.
Wow.
Okay. So that goes to tell you how abusive loads like that are. All right. So yes, if you're shooting 1,550 feet per second, it's going to be way more abuse and way more wear and tear on every component in your gun, including in your body.
Yeah.
Okay. Your neck, your shoulders, your everything. Okay. Your follow-up shots, your equilibrium for follow-up shots. It's going to be way more abusive than if it's less velocity with a little bit less of a payload. Right. Mm-hmm. So keep in mind, felt recoil is 1-to-1 with the weight of your gun. So one pound of gun added is one less felt, recoil foot pound to your shoulder, and as well as payload and velocity. Those are the other things that create recoil. So keep in mind, choke also matters. So if you're shooting a very tight choke versus a very open choke, the very tight choke is going to give you more felt recoil because it's going to increase your back pressure, something people don't think about or know. The other thing that's going to create back pressure is velocity. And the other thing that's going to create more back pressure is the type of payload and the amount of payload. And what I mean by that is if you shoot a 1 ounce lead slug that does not allow any gases to escape in front, you're going to get all of the back pressure pushed to your shoulder. So if you shoot a 1 ounce slug at 1200 feet per second, and you shoot a 1 ounce lead target load at 1200 feet per second, it's two different worlds in recoil. Okay. So there's a lot of things that go into recoil, firearm abuse, wear and tear.
Wow. That sounds simple question, but I like how you explain that, because I thought over the years I was going crazy when I would shoot different loads for speed or for material, different materials, right? And I thought I was like, okay, I'm just imagining things, but this thing's kicking way harder. Well, it was true. It really was. It's not just about 2 3/4 inch or 3 inch. There's more to it than just that. That's part of it, obviously, but yeah, those are good.
There's a lot more to it. So if anybody is into reloading, I mean, the general public wouldn't know this if they just buy factory ammo. But what I learned when I started reloading a long time ago, I have all these reloading recipes, right? Put out by all these different companies. And I'm looking at a steel load of 1 1/4 ounces, and I'm looking at the powder charge, the powder type, let's say long shot, and I'm looking at the grains, and I'm looking at the velocity. Then I look at the next chart, same exact payload of 1 1/4 ounces with the same shot size, same powder, but different pellet material. It's different powder grains to get the same velocity. So we get back to physics, right? So you've got the same payload, the same pellet size, but you've got different powder usage because it's different grams per cubic centimeter of pellet material. It acts different. So 1 3/8 ounces is not 1 3/8 ounces. 1 ounce is not 1 ounce. It all has to do with the material that the pellets are made of. And then, of course, you get into components. But shot to shot is not the same. So these are all things that we don't think about. 1 ounce of steel is not 1 ounce of lead. It's not 1 ounce of bismuth, and it's not 1 ounce of TSS. 1 ounce of a lead number 6 is not a 1 ounce slug.
Right.
Even though they're both lead 1 ounce, they're totally different.
Yeah. Man. So, reckon thing. Days again, Jimmy. Yep. It's like I have thought it, but I haven't. And it's just none of us are, because we're thinking 1 ounce. That's all we're thinking. But it's not the same. It's not even close. And it's so awesome, man. Like, I feel like I've learned so many things from guys that have been duck hunting longer than me, and I feel like I've learned so many things, and I pulled them in, but I don't feel like I've ever been so eye-opened about things. Sometimes the way you explain, I'm not trying to toot your horn, and probably, I know it probably does, people probably think that, I guess, but I think some don't, because their minds are being opened up so much too, because when you said 1 ounce slug, and then 1 ounce of steel six shot, it's like, that was when the lights go bing, like, my goodness, think about it. Like, you're, when you're looking at lead and you're looking at all these other things, you're not thinking the difference, which is still significant. But when you did that comparison, it was like the light bulb went off in my head. I was like, wow, it's the same ounce, but it ain't the same load at all.
That's correct.
Man.
So many people have said to me over the years, and I think I've talked about this, I don't want to beat, you know, something with a stick, but you know, so many people over the years in clay target competition, especially, and people picked it up in hunting too, but they say, just put the muzzle where it needs to be and the target will break. Choke doesn't matter. Ammo doesn't matter. This doesn't matter. That doesn't matter. That's such a crock, man. I mean, it matters.
Big time.
And choke is the last thing that contacts your shot column before it gets delivered to the target. So how could you say that choke doesn't matter? And what I tell people that are firm on that belief, I say to them, well, why don't you shoot a 410 at the US Open or the national championships? Shoot a 410 in 12-gauge in a 12-gauge division. And why don't you do that? Oh, well, I would never do that. Well, why not? Well, because I wouldn't hit anything. Well, why not? Well, because a 410 is hard to hit anything with. Why? Well, because it has less pellets. Well, what does that mean? It means that you have less of an effective pattern, right? Well, yeah. Well, then choke matters, doesn't it?
Yep. So, enough said. Mic drop. Literally. Yep. And again, it's not, it's when you're saying those things, it's has nothing to do with, oh, you know everything, or I'm a know-it-all. It has nothing to do with that. It's just common physics and science, and it's obvious. It's like, And that's what sometimes when people hear things because it changes their thinking, they think, well, they try to argue with it. It's like, it's not about that. It's about proof and testing and physics and all that. So
that's why I love when people ask questions, because I want to be able to teach them, you know? And of course I'm not going to be right about everything.
No,
obviously.
No, never.
But with my experience, I've learned a tremendous amount. And the things that I speak about are facts.
Yeah.
They're not guesses. They weren't taught to me by some mentor or coach from the 1950s. These are facts that I have developed through doing it. And these are the things that I teach are things that I have learned through experience.
Yeah.
You know, not hearsay, not rumors, not marketing. It's fact.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why I teach it, because so much of the information out there that's been spewed is false, and we don't know any better. So we listen to it and we do it because we believe it, especially when we have people that we look up to telling us.
Yeah.
We think that they know because they've done it. Mm-hmm. Well, the fact is a lot of people just talk about it because they've heard it, and the people that they heard it from somebody else.
Right. Right.
It's not because they did it. It's not because they proved it otherwise. It's just that they've spewed information forward, but unfortunately, the information that's been spewed forward was false to begin with, and we're still living by it.
Yeah,
and this is what I'm trying to disprove and teach people about.
Yep, and actually, after this one's done, now we're basically wrapped this one up. We're definitely going to have to do a lot more of these, because I feel like these are going to be a big hit. I really do. And I think it brings up good points. And yeah, it is kind of rapid fire and we're bouncing, but there's a lot of stuff. This is going to be good. I already know what it is. So
the reason we bounce around a lot, and you'll catch me going off course sometimes, is because I need to go off course to come all the way back around full circle to explain it fully.
Yeah.
So some things are not easily explained. They need to be explained in another way, so the light bulb goes on, so you actually understand where I'm coming from and why I'm saying what I say.
Right, and we're asking totally different categories of questions. So anyways, all right, well, thank you again for sharing with us and trying to help us, and thank you everybody for listening, and thank you for your questions. And I can encourage you, if you don't already subscribe to the YouTube channel, the MVM Show podcast channel, if you want to be heard, if you want to get some questions answered, that's the place to do it. Emails are okay, and I did pull some from that, but it definitely, for me, for my sake of time, it is better to go in there and do that. And I don't think you even have to subscribe if you don't want to, but you can ask your questions in there, and I do like them, because a lot of these I wanted answers to too. So different people's thoughts and processes of what they're thinking translates to what a lot of us probably are thinking. So thank you again for coming on and sharing with us.
Welcome,
I appreciate it. And we're in the works. Some people are like, man, that'd be cool if you went back there and hunted together and did some stuff. And I was like, well, prepare yourself, because we're in the works of making that happen. That's definitely up high on my list, and already trying to make plans right now for this coming season. So
a lot of fun, and it'll make for some really good times and some eye-opening moments and some good filming.
Yeah, for sure. And I get all giddy thinking about it.
We're going to shoot multiple guns. We're going to shoot steel. We're going to shoot bismuth. We're going to shoot TSS. And we're going to shoot from, 15 yards out to 100. And we're going to show you what it does.
Okay, awesome. Looking forward to it. Thank you again. And we'll see you guys on the next one.